You're listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco. You've reached Reality Sandwich, where every Thursday at noon we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, the body, the planet, society, our community, and the earth. That was Alicia Keys reminding us to not worry. It's all going to be all right. And if you're worrying, just learn to let it go. Thank you, Alicia, for phenomenal words of wisdom going into 2006. Just let it go. Let it go. My name is Martin Matthews. I am a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist here with Healthful Living in San Francisco. This is our radio show, Reality Sandwich. I am here today with my wife and co-host here at KPOO's Reality Sandwich every Thursday at noon, Julie Matthews. Julie is a certified nutrition consultant. Has been for the last 3 or 4 years. She specializes in working with children and with pregnancy and a whole host of other areas where nutrition is absolutely critical to our overall health and well-being. And today I wanted to firstly introduce Julie. Hi, Julie.
Hello. This is fun. I get to be on the other side.
This is great. I love to be on the behind the mic and having you here as my guest today.
Yeah.
Because it just was really occurring to me as we were speaking a lot over the holidays about healthful living and what is healthful living and this choice to adopt into our deep life paradigm, an approach to lifestyle and wellness that promotes our health and healing and our happiness, to be aware of what we're doing and who we're being in the world and aiming to always be in pursuit of healthful ways of treating our minds and our bodies and our earth. And I thought, you know, what would be the most important thing to really talk about and to understand the first show of the year, the first kind of lead off this 2006? And I thought, well, it's got to be nutrition, because nutrition is so important for the growth of all life. If we want to grow a plant, we have to nurture it, not just give it the a place in which to grow, but it needs the requisite ingredients, i.e. the requisite nutrients required for the creation and sustenance and evolution of life. So to take that very simple notion and broaden it and then bring it right back to home as far as our own bodies and how we nurture and nourish and give our bodies the nutrition to thrive, I wanted to talk about that. So can you just speak a little bit on what is your philosophy of nutrition? And why is it, how did this come to be so important to you?
Sure. Well, I would guess I would call my philosophy holistic nutrition. And so maybe I should start with the different types of nutrition that somebody can practice. You could be a registered dietitian, or you could be what's called a nutrition consultant. I'm a nutrition consultant. So, you know, I'm generalizing here, but in general, I would say that a registered dietitian is kind of akin to the Western medicine philosophy of a nutrition consultant. It deals mostly with fats, carbs, proteins, calories, those kinds of things. Whereas a holistic nutritionist, in my perspective, is somebody, I'm using so there's holistic nutrition and then there's nutrition consultants. So let me go to nutrition consultants, actually. So the difference between, say, an RD and a nutrition consultant is an RD is registered by the Dietetics Association. They become a registered dietitian. Nutrition consultants are certified by specific schools and that have been certified by the state. So that's what I did. I did a 2-year program at a school called Bowman College for Holistic Nutrition. And that is, in my opinion, kind of akin to the alternative world of medicine. So it's sort of the alternative world of nutrition.
Well, that's a conversation we could certainly have right there. What is alternative? Alternative is still called alternative
Maybe I call it complementary, because I don't really like alternative. Alternative means that it's not the main choice that somebody would make. It's an alternative to that. So I suppose more of complementary or holistic therapies.
Yeah, I like using holistic, and I like using this determination, as you were speaking just now, between a registered dietitian and nutrition consultant. Does the framework of reparative versus restorative fit here? Because when I think of traditional medicine, I think of, it's very like repair the system. Something is broken. How do we fix it? Mm-hmm. Right? How do we get it back online, so to speak? And a restorative approach for me, feels more like, okay, well, how do we restore the system back to the way that it was, you know, the way that it works, the way that it's intended to work, the way that it was designed to work.
Optimal functioning.
Right. So therefore, from that perspective, I think, you know, okay, well, what does it need? You know, what does it need in order to, what ingredients does it need? What nurturance does it need?
Sure. So to kind of continue on that, so there's nutrition consultants or certified nutrition consultants, and they can practice any form of nutrition that they want. I practice something that I call holistic nutrition, and that's because I try to look at a holistic perspective of the person. So not only do I do nutrition, but I look at how are we nourishing not only the body, but the cells and the biochemistry, and mm-hmm. how do we nourish the mind, because the nutrients we bring in affects how we think and feel. How do we nourish the emotional body? How do we bring in alternative or complementary therapies into it? So maybe somebody is wanting to, say, lose weight, but they had a lot of traumatic experiences around food when they were younger, so maybe they need to bring in a hypnotherapist.
Right,
and so then
right.
I help guide clients as to other practitioners that might be able to provide a holistic approach to working with, say, in this case, the weight loss.
So really looking at the entire system, everything that's mm-hmm. going on, whereas I'm just going to come up with just an off-the-fly analogy here. Let's say something is wrong with somebody's liver, right? You're having a pain. The traditional reparative approach is like, okay, liver problem, fix liver. How do we repair that immediately? How do we affect the body in some way that you no longer feel pain there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm following my own train of thought here. A holistic perspective, firstly, asks the question, well, how did this go wrong?
Right.
What went wrong here?
Right.
And how do we help the body and all that is, all that encompasses the liver to help repair this, to fix this. And what else other than just the body and its nutrients or lack of nutrients may be affecting what's going on? You mentioned emotions
of course.
Other circumstances in one's environment.
Yeah, but what you're doing also, though, is getting into a broader perspective than just nutritionists. I was trying to keep it to a nutritionist perspective.
Okay.
You're bringing in sort of holistic health versus, you know, kind of traditional, the traditional model. And I would agree. And we could have a whole show on that and take it a step further. And we've done that on a lot of shows. How does somebody approach it? And are they just band-aiding the situation? Are they trying to understand the root cause? And are they trying to fix it from the root cause of what's imbalanced? And within that framework of holistic health is a little piece called holistic nutrition.
Okay.
So that's kind of where I think that would fit in.
Right. And you were saying with respect to nutrition, you're really also deeply comprehending the cellular structure and the biochemistry of the body.
Sure. And when I made the comparison to registered dietitians, I am not in any means saying anything negative about them.
It's
just a question a lot of people have for me. What's the difference? And I just kind of explain it sort of the model or the framework. And some registered dietitians have that great certification and branch out into a lot of holistic areas as well. But so, you know, I'm just explaining to people because a lot of times people are confused by titles, and I kind of wanted to explain where the licensing or certification came from and kind of what some of the general differences are.
Now, you study holistic nutrition up at Bowman College, which
Correct.
Has been Ed Bowman up there has been growing and expanding his organization for the last several years.
Actually, I think they've been around for, I want to say 15 or 20 years.
Yeah. It's been around for quite a while. And they also, in addition to the nutrition programs, they teach cooking.
Correct. They teach
a kind of
holistic culinary arts program. So for people that want to become a chef or do personal, what do I call that? Personal cooking for people in home cooking, they take a very holistic perspective to how do I make the most nutritious foods for somebody.
Right. See, Ed's like a guy that I look at like a real beacon of hope, right? Here comes a guy who, you know, through the 70s and 80s realizes that, you know, the world needs to be learning and the importance of nourishing the body and teaching people how to understand nutrition and health. and he starts this school and has been spawning nutrition consultants for years. Well, I mean, he started it, right? So
he's been nurturing.
He's nurturing nutrition consultants.
He's definitely very passionate about educating people and helping get the message out to other people. So,
So you've studied there, and I think you've finished over 3 years ago or so now? You've been
I've had a practice for over 3 years. Absolutely.
Okay. And then over that time, you yourself, coming out of this field with your own personal passion in holistic nutrition, which grew initially out of an interest in medicine?
Yeah. So it's kind of funny for you to do the interview because some of the answers you know. And so you have to sort of sometimes you feed me the questions from the perspective of somebody who may not know that much. But yes, absolutely. I originally went to UC Davis to study pre-med to go to med school. And there was something at the time, I didn't really know what it was, but something that just didn't feel right about it. Mm-hmm. And now I know what it was. Now I know that it wasn't the model of healthcare that I wanted to practice. So I ended up getting a Bachelor of Science in Agricultural and Managerial Economics.
That meaningful to you, is it?
The title's not so important.
That it took you that long to remember what it was. So you clearly had an interest in the body. I was always interested
in it, and it just came down to, at the time, you know, when you're 18 or 20 or whatever it is, trying to figure out what you want to do with the rest of your life and what you're interested in. So I've always been interested in nutrition. I ended up going into the regular corporate world for quite a while. But I was always reading books on nutrition. My mom was a dietitian, so I was always interested. And we always in my family ate healthy food since I was really young. And I enjoyed that. And so when I was trying to make a career change, I was trying to figure out what I really enjoyed doing in life and felt that that was working and helping people with their health. I was always in my own personal life pursuing Ayurveda or acupuncture or nutrition or something, always reading a book, always reading these sort of self-help health books and things.
Right.
And then I kind of thought, okay, well, if I want to go into this field, what to me is the foundation of all of that? And to me, food and proper nutrition and what we feed ourselves every day is really, to me, the foundation of good health.
Yeah.
And so that's where I started. And since then, I've considered, do I want to be an acupuncturist? And very lately, I've been thinking, oh, I want to be a naturopathic doctor and I should go to school. And that might be a direction I continue to take it. But currently, I've been very satisfied with working on the nutrition side with people.
Well, let's talk about what you are doing. And you became a nutrition consultant, you mentioned, a little over 3 years now. And you've had your own practice, Healthful Living. And you have been growing your own specialties, your own areas within the application of holistic nutrition and your deep knowledge of biochemistry in the body and how nutrition can impact those systems. So what have you kind of fallen into as far as areas of, like, you know, where you really are passionate about applying this and teaching people and helping them with their health and their lives?
Yeah. So my specialty is basically kids. Mm-hmm. It's healthy kids and healthy families. So my initial interest was in ADHD and what was creating this sort of epidemic of all this ADHD we were seeing. And as I was studying it, I learned that there were amazing things that could be done that... And also learned that autism has very similar, if not the same, underlying causes as ADHD, but just autism is a much more extreme, complicated condition.
Just to clarify for listeners, ADHD, is that the same as ADD?
And
everybody says,
thank you.
Kid has ADD.
Yeah.
Or I'm
so
a little ADD.
You can call them, you can use them sort of interchangeably, but technically ADD is attention deficit disorder, which is sort of being inattentive, maybe spacey, not being able to focus and concentrate. Whereas ADHD, some people refer to attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. So some people lump both of those conditions, both the inattentive and the hyperactivity, into ADHD. Mm. It could be either one of those. And there's different ways to describe it, but that's, I would say, one of those two things, which are very, very different, by the way. You can have a child that's very hyperactive and running around, but when it's time to focus, they're great at it. Where you have others that are so hyper that they can't focus. And then you have some that are just sort of spacey but have really low energy. And so they definitely are don't always go together.
What's the what are we hearing about mostly as far as, you know, the epidemic in our schools today? All these kids are, you know, all these kids on Ritalin being given all these drugs are mostly ADD or mostly ADHD?
You know, I don't really separate them out. I refer all of it as ADHD, and I consider it that they have inattentiveness and or hyperactivity. And in the schools, I think that they also kind of lump them together under one thing. For the individual, obviously, they're very different. A lot of people do have both of them occurring together. I would say, this is just my opinion, I don't know this, but I would say that the more unruly, difficult things to deal with for a teacher would be people that are causing disruption. So those, so hyperactivity probably tends to get more attention from teachers. But, you know, for the child and for the parent of somebody that has attention challenges, it's no less problematic. But I think that, I think for the most part, they're all lumped into one.
So did I hear you correct a moment ago, Julie? You were mentioning that some of the underlying, I don't want to say causes, but underlying circumstances that affect this disorder evolving or creating in the body are similar for ADHD, ADD, and then also autism?
Correct, correct. And this is something that is always, you know, takes a little while for people to wrap their head around how food can have an impact on autism. And I would love to go into that a little bit today, but I wanted to bring it back a little bit to kind of some the rest of the kid thing. So,
sure.
so my focus is, in addition to children that might have an imbalance of some sort, whether it's aggression or irritability, hyperactivity, blah, blah, blah. In addition to those things, I also like to work with healthy kids. So I do a lot with kids that are healthy and how to make them, how have them be optimally healthy and set up a condition where for the rest of their life, they've kind of created a foundation that will serve them. So, for example, you only lay down bone mass for a certain amount of years in your youth. And if you miss that window, it's a little bit difficult to build bone mass after that. So what you do in childhood is very important, not only for the health of the child, but also for the health of the adult that grows up.
Right.
And so I like to look at how can we optimally, even if you're not having a, quote, condition or an imbalance, how can we help to optimize the health of our kids so that it sets up a lifelong situation of health.
So are you working with the kids and parents?
So that's a great question. Often I'm working with the parents because often I work with, well, I mean, I work with kids, you could say from 2 years old to 18 years old, but often it's when they first get diagnosed. So a lot of the kids I work with are from 2 to 9 years old. And so usually in that case, I'm working with the parents and helping the parents figure out how to adapt the diet. But I do have definitely quite a few teenagers with eating disorders or digestive problems or diabetes or other things. And then I often work with, so it depends the family dynamic. Sometimes kids are really mature and want to work alone. Often I work with the two of them together. And then the last piece of the healthy kid thing is, well, how do you make them healthy before they're even born?
Right.
So how do you work with pregnant women and optimize the health to prevent not only miscarriages and things, but how to, you know, maximize the health so they develop a strong immune system and they develop a strong digestive system from the day that they're born, because that, you know, that's not always the case. And so a lot of parents want to know, well, what can I do now? How can I, just like you want to build bone mass in your younger years, how do you build, you know, brain cells and brain development and brain function? That is a huge portion of that's developed before you're even born.
So how do you build a better baby?
Right. How do you work with moms that are pregnant, breastfeeding, all those great things to nourish children on the very, very early stages? And even before that, some parents will come to me saying that they want to get pregnant and they want to set their body up to be as healthy as possible. And, you know, a lot of birth defects happen within the first 3 weeks of gestation, and that's often before a woman knows
doesn't it usually take like a month before somebody even...
Usually before they even know they're pregnant. Mm-hmm. A lot of those really essential systems are already developed, and so a lot of moms come to me saying, well, I want to build up those nutrient reserves so that I have all those things for when I get pregnant, or I want to detoxify all these environmental chemicals that I heard can go into breast milk. How do I do that? And so as long as they're not pregnant, we can definitely do detoxification. But once they are pregnant, you cannot do detoxification at that point. So that's why some adults or parents or future moms-to-be will come to me and say that they want to work on things beforehand.
Right. It would seem to me it would be absolutely essential if you know you're having kids coming up soon.
It's ideal.
That you'd want to think ahead of time about giving yourselves the best opportunity to be healthy as you can and just be intentional about making a new life is kind of a big deal. Mm-hmm. It's not exactly like just planting a tree in the backyard and let me get some good fertilizer and stuff. This is like a baby.
Yeah. And the great thing is that most women that I meet, especially ones that have had fertility challenges in the past, are just want to do everything possible. Pregnant women are really fun to work with because they are so motivated and so excited to do everything possible, and they do.
It just seems so critical to me when I look around the world today, especially here in the U.S., where 2/3 of our population could be labeled significantly overweight. I don't know what the percentage nowadays of kids, childhood obesity rates are through the roof, childhood diabetes rates are through the roof. Is it just that we are being bombarded by people selling us junk, or have we completely given up our ability to make a choice between healthy, not healthy? Do we not have them? I mean, we don't teach it anymore in schools, or what's going on, do you think? I mean, why are we so off the track with respect to taking care of ourselves? Mm-hmm.
I think part of it's lifestyle. We're so busy that it's difficult to find the time. While it's not impossible, and while it's not very difficult, it definitely takes extra effort, attention, and time to eat healthy. Mm. You often have to cook your own food. You definitely have to go shopping more frequently because everything you're buying is fresh. And so it takes time. And the other piece, I think, is that people just don't know that we've been sort of taught that fats, carbs, proteins, and calories are the important thing, that the quality of food is never really taught. So I think people just don't know.
Mm-hmm. Me personally, I talk about it quite a bit on the show about how intrigued I am with the messages that I say, message from the Matrix, really the system, right? This aggregate organizations and companies that are advertising us and selling us images and selling us and telling us what to do and what to buy and how to be, that there's such an incredible obsession, especially for women, this notion of being thin.
Mm-hmm.
Being thin and skinny, and impossibly skinny, by the way, because the pictures we're seeing on the magazines are altered, so you're really not even seeing what's real. But this notion that you have to be that way, and this notion in society that being thin is being healthy.
Right. Well, whereas being overweight can be unhealthy. Also, we know being really thin can be unhealthy, but we sort of equate being thin with being healthy. And interestingly, most of those people are definitely malnourished, highly malnourished. Those really, really thin, the kind of our quote role models for in the magazines. Most of them eat 1,200 calories or less. And if you look at the World Health Organization, they say starvation begins under 2,000 calories. Now, that's the average person, so there's probably a lot of people that do well on 1,800, maybe even 1,600. But 1,200 calories, it's very difficult to get the calcium, magnesium, nutrients, fatty acids, all of those important things that you need to get in your diet in when you're not eating enough food. And, I don't know if this is unpopular to say, but, if you look at some of the war times and concentration camps and things, those people were eating 900 to 1,200 calories, and there's a lot of people today that are eating the same amount of calories. You cannot sustain a health with that amount of calories. So the other piece of it is that a lot of people that are thin naturally think they don't need to worry about food. So people that can eat a whole bag of M&Ms and a half gallon of ice cream and all those kinds of things.
What is it? Overactive thyroid people or whatever.
Well, they might just be naturally thin. They might just have a fast metabolism. They might not be overactive. It might just be, they might just have a fast metabolism and they might be able to eat a lot of food. Mm-hmm. And so they assume that they don't need to worry about what they eat or pay attention to what they eat because it's not showing up in their the amount of fat they have.
Right.
But we know that just because you're not overweight doesn't mean that all of the sugars and the artificial colorings from the M&Ms or whatever it is isn't having an impact, or the sodas that they're drinking isn't having an impact on bone density or whatever. So, you know, some people that come to me that are a little overweight or have been struggling for a long time, I say, you know, in a way, you're a little lucky because you have the ability or have put attention for a long time on eating healthy, because you can't just go around and eat all the junk food in sight. And so sometimes they have, in a strange way, sort of a little bit of an advantage. If they can then figure out what's causing the weight gain and they can figure out how to work with it.
Hmm. You're listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco. We're listening to Reality Sandwich, and I'm here today chatting with Julie Matthews, nutrition consultant, and we're talking all about nourishing the body, nourishing our minds, holistic nutrition. I wanted to back up just a second, Julie, and talk a little bit more about, kind of get back to the kids thing, and mm-hmm. we were looking at sort of how does it get this way, and how do we perpetuate these patterns that have now led us to tremendous rates of childhood obesity and diabetes in our schools. And I was reading something just the other day about how the, I think the headline was something like, government doesn't fund own school program or something like that. And it was saying basically that the government doesn't subsidize the farmers who make the stuff that that the government says the kids are supposed to be eating in the schools.
Okay. I don't know if I followed that.
The government puts out a program and says that in our cafeterias, all government schools are supposed to be serving kids certain stuff.
Okay.
Right. But they don't help out the people that are making the stuff that they're supposed to be serving.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, they give incredible tax breaks to the companies that are selling the tomato paste and the cookies and the Coca-Cola machines and stuff.
Right.
Essentially saying that while our legislators have said, you know, hey, here's what we should be doing in schools for everybody to be healthy, Their behavior is completely antithetical.
So they're saying they're doing these things, but they're not really setting it up so it's possible for people to do those things.
So what are some of the biggest offenders and some of the biggest problems that in these kids' diets as far as what they're getting in schools or just in their regular lives?
Mm-hmm. So I'd say there's a few pieces to that. Probably the biggest one is artificial ingredients, artificial colors, flavors, and preservatives. And this is one of the areas when I said that people just don't know. They assume that, understandably, they assume that if something is in a package,
mm-hmm.
that it's safe. I mean, we have a Food and Drug Administration that's supposed to take care of these things.
Yeah, they wouldn't let it be in there if it wasn't going to be okay for me.
Right. And actually, most of these artificial ingredients are what they call GRAS, G-R-A-S, generally regarded as safe. And they were grandfathered in before the FDA was actually formed. So none of them actually have been tested as safe. They only get taken off the list when they've found to be unsafe. And so little by little, I don't know if you remember in the 70s, they had that red dye number 5 or something.
Right,
that was cancerous or something.
We had to not eat those M&Ms.
Yeah. And they took the M&Ms out for a really long time until they brought them back with a new red color. Well, that's a perfect example, is that they then found that that was very harmful to people and they took that color out. But what about all the other colors and all the other artificial flavors? We know by a lot of people that have done research on this, and people that are highly sensitive, that, and you don't have to be highly sensitive. We just learned a lot from those people. It is difficult to process these artificial ingredients. They have to be processed by the liver, and they're very difficult to process. And they are a huge cause of hyperactivity in our schools.
Mm.
There is the chemical in them needs to be detoxified, and the system gets overloaded, and they can't detoxify them fast enough. And then you see a lot of the behavioral symptoms, the aggression or the hyperactivity that we're seeing, and parents have no idea because they assume that they're safe, that these ingredients would be harmful.
Yeah, unless somebody's told us not to eat it. or we know that it's killed somebody or done something
right.
really bad,
right. or, yep.
you know, it's okay. It's there. It's on the shelf.
We've eaten them. We eat them all the time.
Right.
I don't
notice anything.
Well, you don't. Yeah, you don't eat the M&M and all of a sudden throw up, or you don't eat the M&M and you know are you know in bed for 2 weeks. So it's not that poisonous, but over the long term, it certainly is.
So it's not just the sugar.
Correct. It's not just the sugar. But there's a lot in the sugar. High fructose corn syrup and a variety of the other really concentrated sugars that they come out with. And the artificial sweeteners are, especially the high fructose corn syrup that's in most sodas, spikes blood sugar levels much more significantly than straight glucose would. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you wonder why diabetes rates have gone up. And in my opinion, this is a huge reason for that. The way that they make high fructose corn syrup is, you wouldn't be happy to know how it's made. It's there's no nutritional value, and it spikes blood sugar a lot. So things like that, while sugar is, we don't want to have large amounts of it. There's also a further problem with all of these artificial ingredients. So I recommend a lot of times, you know what, if you're not going to get the sugar out of your diet, at least shop somewhere like Whole Foods or Rainbow or some natural food store where you can know that at least there might be sugar, but most likely there's not high fructose corn syrup and there's no artificial ingredients, because most of those stores don't sell those kinds of things. So at least if you're eating sugar, you're eating a little bit more of a normal form of sugar than these highly processed forms.
Right. Now, what has been your experience with people eliminating some of this stuff out of their diet?
In what regard?
Like someone who is having some sort of... I may want to get back to that question because...
Are you talking about... Okay.
Yeah, people... That,
health-wise?
Yeah, health-wise.
Well, sometimes it's really simple. Sometimes just a few simple changes. Literally going to the natural food store and buying your jelly beans from there, your mm-hmm. chocolate from there, and your cereals from there, even though I don't advocate any of those foods on a daily basis. But just simply doing that, if someone didn't go to a, quote, health food diet, but just simply got the more natural forms, sometimes you see hyperactivity decrease greatly. I mean, sharply, in the course of a day or a couple days.
Right.
You can see, depending on what it is and what their challenges are, you can see anything from energy levels stabilize mm-hmm. to constipation, diarrhea. Again, depends what was causing some of these things. But sometimes literally a few simple changes. I'm not even suggesting that they eat brown rice and broccoli every day.
But just getting that artificial stuff out of there.
Those toxic foods out of the diet can make a huge difference, even if we don't even touch sugar.
Sure.
And then a couple other the other ingredients that are probably most detrimental to kids. One is MSG, and in my newsletter, in fact, you can go look it up on the website. If you click on the newsletter button, I think it was one of the last ones that I did. I explain all the hidden sources of MSG. So those are things like hydrolyzed. They got savvy and they knew that people didn't want MSG. But a lot, if you look at many Doritos packages and things like that, you'll see MSG or monosodium glutamate right on the label. If you don't see that, they've now hidden it under names like hydrolyzed vegetable protein, hydrolyzed soy protein. It sounds healthy, doesn't it? Hydrolyzed soy protein? You know, you don't know. It doesn't sound like
sure.
It doesn't sound like MSG. Autolyzed yeast extract, uh-huh. quote, flavorings. These things that sound
flavoring.
Even natural flavor can have MSG in it.
Yeah.
And so it's in the big challenge with MSG is that it spikes insulin levels, and I think it's a huge cause for the great increase we've seen in type 2 diabetes in young children.
Mm.
So, to me, MSG is one of those things that not only for people that are sensitive that might get headaches and things, but for the long-term health and blood sugar regulation of the individual or the child. And this you have to do a little bit of digging, because even most of the natural food stores have MSG or MSG derivatives in their food.
And so the kids are still getting all this stuff in schools?
You know, for the most part, because they're sort of hidden in the foods, they may or may not be getting artificial colors in their pizza or hamburger, but chances are they probably are getting MSG in most of those foods. And the people that are preparing the foods, just like most people out there, just don't know that there are these hidden sources. And then the last one I would say would be trans fats. Trans fats, we need essential fats for burning fat for every cell in our body, for our skin, and we need essential fats for brain growth and brain development. And when you have trans fats, which are the bad fats, they sort of displace and bump out all the good fats. And then all of the things that we want, like good brain growth and brain development and energy regulation and fat burning and all those things, are greatly diminished with trans fats. And now they know that trans fats are a much greater cause of heart disease and plaque in the arteries than cholesterol and the animal fats ever could be or will be. And so they, you know, the animal fats have gotten a really bad name, and we've replaced it with all these processed vegetable trans fats, and now we're doing a bigger disservice. So some simple things for those people that are looking to take those out of the diet is look on the label, and anything that says hydrogenated or partially hydrogenated oil, you want to avoid. So the big ones here are Skippy and Jif peanut butter.
Ooh.
If you look at the second ingredient, it's peanuts and then oil, partially hydrogenated oil. So that's a really simple thing that you can do, is you can go to, again, a natural food store and get a natural peanut butter. And if you say your kids don't like natural peanut butters, even places like Whole Foods sell a, quote, kids version, which has a little bit of sugar, so it's a little bit more like a Skippy, and but without the trans fats in them. So it's a much more smoother texture, a little bit, has a little bit of sugar. And so it's a little bit more in line with the Jiffy and the Skip, the Jif and the Skippy, but doesn't have the trans fats in it. Lots of crackers and cookies. The reason manufacturers use trans fats is because they have a long shelf life. So all of those hydrogenated oils can make a package of crackers sit on the shelf for literally years without any rancidity of the oils in there. And so they use it because it's cheaper, because there's not as much product loss. It's cheaper to make, but it's at the expense of kids. So you can either go to a natural food store for this, or you can even go to a regular grocery store and just read the label and look for something that doesn't have partially hydrogenated or hydrogenated oils in it. And those simple things, doing your best to take out the MSG, taking out the artificial colors, flavors, and preservatives, taking out the trans fats and the artificial sweeteners, will have a huge impact. And you don't even have to touch the subject of sugar or broccoli if you don't want.
That's what keeps people, I think, so much from really ever doing anything, is
right,
because they have this belief that you have to stop, you know, eating everything, and you have to totally radically change your entire life.
Exactly. And I don't want people stuck in paralysis of doing nothing because of that. So there are a lot of simple things that you can do without having your kids revolt and create mutiny in the kitchen that will make a huge difference.
So what are some of the best things?
So, you know, children are highly impacted by pesticides, and so doing organic foods whenever possible. And, you know, a lot of people will tell me that organic food is expensive, and yes, it is more expensive. But to me, it's the quality of the food. A lot of times we crave fats or we crave carbohydrates and things because we're not getting those essential nutrients in the quality of the food. So sometimes a little bit of quality food can go a long way. And also, if you compare it to things like McDonald's and those processed cereals and processed crackers and things, it's not actually, when you really look at the bottom line, it's actually not that much more expensive. So you want to look for organic produce when you can, fruits and vegetables. And the farmer's market is a great place to get some less expensive organic fruits and vegetables.
If you can't always do organic on your fruits and veggies, are there just a couple of quick things like that you would say, definitely don't ever not buy an organic something or other that are really, you know, highly...
You don't want to do strawberries.
Okay, strawberries.
Non-organic. Or any sort of berry, anything with a porous skin like a strawberry or a raspberry that absorbs those toxins into it.
Sure.
Whereas something with a peel, you could probably get away with a little bit more.
Like a banana.
I mean, bananas have lots of fungus and fungicides and things that are pretty harmful for people. But in general, you can peel it, and it's less, and it's something that if you had to make a compromise, you could make a compromise.
Sure,
or sure. Something that you can wash the skin really vigorously, like an apple.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really wash the skin of a strawberry or a raspberry without destroying it.
Right, right.
And then, you know, just also looking at conventional produce typically from other countries, because we often ship a lot of our toxic pesticides that we don't use in this country to other countries, and they use them.
Mm.
So that's another thing to look at. And then just looking at ways of getting good fats in the diet. That's probably another essential. It's so important for brain growth and brain development. I think I've said it 3 times now, to get enough essential fats. And we don't do that. Either we're fat phobic and we do low fat everything, or we just don't pay attention to the quality. And omega-3, which we've probably heard a lot about in the news, It's you have to kind of search it out in your food in order to get it. So the main places to find it are cold water fish. And some people don't want to do a lot of cold water fish because of mercury. But if they do fish, you're probably not going to get your kids to eat that much sardines and salmon. And so that, you know, a special attention has to be paid to get that in. And then flax seeds and flax oil. And a lot of people aren't aware of this. So that's another simple thing that you can do is to, especially kids that tend to have constipation or don't like to eat vegetables, if you can sprinkle some ground flax seeds in or on their food, that makes a benefit of having good fats and fiber in the diet. And just, you know, one of my favorites actually is cod liver oil, what your grandma probably told you to drink.
Right.
And we've gotten away
yeah.
from that. But there's a whole great new movement of people that are doing cod liver oil on a daily basis.
It tastes bitter now, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, they actually flavor it now with either orange or peach or something. And actually, okay, so you can tell me, being a vegetarian who does not eat any meat or fish at ever never crossed your lips, what do you think about cod liver oil?
I love it. I mean, you're going to play this back to me at some point and go, oh, you said that. I know, I really do. I never would have ever thought about having
right.
it ever before in my life. I've always known it's really good for me.
Right.
Right? But, yeah.
Yeah, right.
But now
you
it's like it's
it.
Got natural flavoring stuff in it. And it's like, tastes, you know, it's nice and it's great.
Yeah, yeah. It really, yeah. really tastes fine. It does not have a fishy flavor. And in fact, if your oils do have a fishy flavor, you want to return it to the store because that means it's rancid. You want to get a really good high quality fish oil.
See, now that really, that's like a tremendous advancement, I think. I mean, as
yeah.
much as we've got things that are advanced in our world that are disserving us with all this junk food everywhere you go, there's also great new products and opportunities and ways for us to make choices about being healthy.
Yep.
We've been speaking today with Julie Matthews. She's a certified nutrition consultant. We've been spending our first episode here of the year talking about nutrition and the, you know, the real critical importance of understanding nutrition and nurturance of our bodies for our overall health and well-being for a long, happy, and healthy life. I want to just... We've only got about, you know, 10 minutes left, Julie, and you mentioned earlier that that nutrition can so impact ADHD, as we were speaking about, and also autism.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like you to just give me a touch
sure.
just briefly on that connection with autism, and then we're going to wrap up, and I'd like you to tell me just, you know, a little bit about some of the things that you're doing and
sure.
some healthy tips for all of us.
Great, great. So when you look at autism or ADHD or depression for that matter, it's a neurological condition, which means that we have a biochemistry that you can even people that sell Zoloft will tell you that you have a chemical imbalance.
Mm-hmm.
But what is never asked is why? Why is there a chemical imbalance? And what we look at what I look at is why is there a chemical imbalance? What is going on in the brain or in the body that's creating some problems with the neurotransmitters or some problems with those brain chemicals that's creating this. So that's basically what I do, is I look at certain foods like these artificial colors, flavors, and preservatives that I mentioned. They actually have to be detoxified by the liver. And if they can't be, they build up in the body and they cross the blood-brain barrier and act like a drug on the brain. And they cause all sorts of symptoms that we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one example of sort of taking some of the toxic foods out. Also, while there's other foods that aren't technically toxic, like wheat or gluten or dairy, what happens for some kids is that and some adults is that just can't process these foods. And what happens to them is that these big protein chains can't be broken down properly, and they start creating endorphins and opiates and have a direct effect on the neurotransmitters of the brain. The other thing we see is that not only do these kids, so it's not a psychological disorder, it's a, you know, a thinking problem, it's a neurological disorder. And in my mind, that means that the biochemistry has affected the neurological system. And just as we, it can be imbalanced, we can help to balance the biochemistry. And that helps to balance out some of these things. So looking at adding certain nutrients to the diet that help with brain function. So adding good essential fats, making sure they get their calcium and magnesium and B6 and all those good nutrients that they need to have the brain functioning. Because, you know, face it, we'd all love kids to eat really well, but they don't all eat really well. And for some of these kids that we're talking about here, they even have really compromised digestion, digestive systems. And so they're even less likely to absorb the nutrients from the food. And so we look at how can we get some of these nutrients in them that they couldn't normally get. And then we look at how can we heal up. Most people don't realize that not only is it a neurological condition, but because this biochemistry that created their neurological condition also creates physical symptoms and physical conditions. So they often have weakened immune function. They often have very weakened digestive systems. So how do we look at giving them good food and good nutrients that help to balance these other systems so they're not getting sick all the time, so they don't have diarrhea all the time.
Sure. The body is amazingly complex and incredibly intelligent and so affected by so many different factors. And I can begin to comprehend, I mean, how much it really takes to look at that system and go, wow, how do we nurture it? How do we nourish it to give it its best opportunity to restore health within itself?
Exactly.
I mean,
and
that's
then,
what it does.
Exactly. And then the good thing about all of this is that once we balance out the biochemistry, we start to balance digestion. Digestion gets better. They can start to absorb more of their own nutrients from the food they're eating. They start to enjoy other foods more and get more nutrients. So so just as it creates this downward spiral when things aren't working, when you make some changes, it can create this upward spiral, and things can actually get a lot better. And while you might need to be strict and have a more a restrictive diet for a while, it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to continue for the rest of their life. So you actually create a situation where we sort of kickstart their own system to be doing what it should have been doing originally by getting the biochemistry evened back out.
It must be very satisfying for you to work with families and children who have been diagnosed and didn't really have much hope, and then they come to you and they learn how much they can do, and they implement some of this, and their children actually improve.
Absolutely. I wrote a book called Nourishing Hope, and I wrote it, and I titled it for that exact reason, both nourishing the system and also realizing that there is hope that you can actually change the situation that they're in, that it's not a lifelong condition. And unfortunately, most educators and most people in the traditional medical model haven't been taught that and haven't researched that and aren't aware of that. People always ask me, well, that's not proven. Actually, it is proven. There's tons of scientific research out there, and there's now many, many medical doctors that actually practice the same form of nutrition and holistic healthcare because it is solidly based in science.
Right. We do understand and we do realize that wherever we are now, we didn't just get here. We did stuff yesterday and did certain consistent things over time that have eventuated in circumstances that we have now. So no matter what it is that we're dealing with, whether it's our ill health, unhappiness in the society that we've created, whatever it is can be changed over time by shifting what we do today and tomorrow based on knowledge that we've learned from understanding the past and applying it. And it's phenomenal that you can teach that to families and that these kids can learn and change and improve.
I love doing it because it can make such a difference.
So you have a private practice, you do workshops, and then you also teach, like you were saying, teach women how to be healthy before they even create a baby.
Yeah. So I do a workshop. I do a pre-pregnancy and pregnancy workshop, preconception and pregnancy workshop, and it's a four-week class, and it's usually a couple hours a night for a month, and I have them all over the Bay Area from San Francisco, Marin, East Bay, and Peninsula, and they can find more information on my website for that. And also, I do private consultations, and I do them in person and by phone, kind of depending on where people are. I see people around the country as well as locally. And so people can come in and get something very customized, either for themselves or their kids, or they can come take a class. I teach cooking classes and all sorts of things if people want to get some good ideas. Because like I said, sometimes just simple things can make a really big difference.
just in the parting moment or two, what are a couple of quick, simple things that we all should be thinking about just to improve our overall health and nutrition this year?
Mm. Well, let me just say something that parents can do for kids that don't like vegetables, because this is always a huge one. So if you can get your kids to eat smoothies, so whatever that is, some good plain yogurt with some frozen fruit and whatever other good stuff, blend it up in the blender. If you ahead of time make up these ice cubes and throw them into the smoothie, this is how you can get some vegetables into your kids. So what you want to do is cook and puree whatever vegetables sound good to you. So whether it's broccoli, it depends how picky they are too. If green is going to bother them, you can leave out the green things and you can just go with things like carrots and sweet potatoes and even zucchini, or you can peel the zucchini if you have to, or whatever vegetables you can find. And you want to cook them up and then blend them into a puree and then freeze them in little ice cube trays. And then take out a couple of them each time you make a smoothie. Put them in. You can even put a little orange juice if you want to flavor them, so that if kids want to taste them and wonder what you're putting in there, they taste sweet. And they don't have a vegetable-y texture or a flavor, and it's just a really good way to get some good nutrients. You can even put lentils. I mean, you can make these ice cubes and put lentils and put them into meatballs if you wanted to.
Julie Matthews with phenomenal ways to nourish our children and nourishing hope in all of us. And remember, anything that's going on with you, whether it's yourself, you're unhappy in any way, it's your body, it's your mind, it's the planet, we can change it. We can nourish it day by day. Tomorrow begins today.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing more important than the present moment and the choices that we make now, evidenced and informed by our past. So, been a great show. Great to have you on.
Thank
Julie,
you.
People can find you at healthfullivingsf.com. You can get the link if you go to the KPOO website. My name is Martin Matthews. I am a certified medical and clinical hypnotherapist and advocate for healthful living. And you've been listening to Reality Sandwich, broadcast every Thursday at noon here at 89.5 KPOO San Francisco. I'll be back next Thursday. Thanks for tuning in.